when I come to this room, it brings back a lot of fond memories. I saw many old faces, from RCC's brothers and sisters, and I also saw many new faces that I've met in training and workshops in the past 2 years. And if you are the second group, like Queenie and all the other people, this is my home church. If you wonder where's Pastor Teresa's home church, because now I'm a consulting pastor, so I go around to different churches and you say, oh, where's my church? This has been my home church for the past 38 years. Yeah, even before we moved into this site. And for the Arch 3Cs, the brothers and sisters, I miss you all. And because now I miss you because I don't see you as often as I wish on Sunday, because now I'm attending Saturday worship. I'm still here, but I'm attending Saturday worship so that on Sunday I can go out to preach and also to teach in other churches. Actually, 3 years ago in Toronto, in just 18 months, we have lost 18 children pastors, either through retirement or resignation. So God has called me out, that's why it is a blessing for them is build leaders, equip servants, and stand in the gap. God has called me out. That's a gap in children ministry. Come out to use my, because I've been serving children ministry for 38 years, come out to use the experience, the mistakes that I've made, or the shortcuts that I've found, hopefully, to also bring blessing to the other churches and also in the mission field. But never would I notice that I'm thinking of concentrating on children ministry, but somehow God has opened many doors for me in parenting. I don't think it's because I'm qualified here tonight to stand here tonight in front of you to give our parenting workshop. Not because some of you may know that I'm taking a doctoral program in Fuller Seminary, focusing on family and youth ministry right now. But it's not because of that. And it's not because that I'm a pastor. And also not because that I'm a perfect parent. But in contrary, I've made many mistakes as a parent. So that's why as I'm standing here, I have that passion to tell you, don't make the same mistake as I've made, when my children are younger. Or like when a parent come out to share with me the sad story about these children, I could give them a big hug and tell them, in God, there is hope. So today, I'm going to share with you a lot of struggles that our teenagers are facing. And there are a lot of the brochures. There's my brochure. So if you can, I'm in the front line. So all the time I'm facing spiritual warfare. And if you allow me to say about the mission trip, how I face face-to-face, facing spiritual warfare, I tell you, you don't have to go far. Just 5 minutes ago, my computer never come down. You ask our friend here, and all of a sudden, we set up everything, and it's just going all wacky. I don't know why, but I am still very calm. Because if in the mission field, I can face the spiritual warfare just by 5 seconds, I was almost killed by Satan. I know tonight must be something that I'm not me, but God is going through to use my lips, my mouth, to tell you something so important that Satan wants to stop and wants to, have that spiritual warfare attack on my computer. I don't know why, but allow me today speak through my mouth, but it's actually God telling every one of you what we are facing, what our youth are facing today. Okay, so as our youth are upstairs, let the presence of God be in this room so that we could together encourage one another to see how we can dance with our children. And I'm going to tell you why I use this topic later on, this title, okay? But before that, let's bow down to a word of prayer. Dear Father God, we give thanks to you because you have given us all these children as our heritage. And sometimes we as a parent, we are lost. We may be feeling frustrated, and sometimes we don't have enough patience, we don't have enough wisdom. So tonight, as we ask for you to have your presence in this room with us, through the lips of servant, please have the message. Go into the heart of each of the parents. Open up their eyes, open up their heart, open up their ears. So they will receive this message, and then they will continue to encourage their children and have a beautiful dance in the Lord under your grace. We thank you and we pray in the wonderful name of our Lord Jesus. Amen. Actually, if you want, you know, like, I think you want to see my PowerPoint more than you see my face. Okay, so if you like, you know, if you like, you can turn off the light. That maybe make it easier for you to see. Okay. My title here is Dancing with Our Youth. At first, it states that it's your youth, but I think it's better to use our youth. So that it's not only your kids, but all the young people around you, that we are dancing with them. So, you know, when God has created us, He has created us as a spiritual being. That's why there's a hole inside us. And it's only God can satisfy and fill that hole in us. But God is very fair. When there's a hole here, He also has given us an invisible antenna. And that antenna has that potential to reach out to God, to connect with Him. So we are made as a spiritual being. But all the same, you know, our children are just as much spiritual beings as adults. They also have an invisible antenna there. Even when they were born at birth, that already they, through very naturally, when they see the creation, when they see this sunshine into the room, that somehow they can connect with God. So we are going to see what are we supposed to do. I don't know if you are old enough to have experienced that, the record. If you see that, you will know my age. You know, like I listen to Hui Gun Ki, okay? And something for Hei, those kind of things. So it's a black record with the turntable. And, you know, as a parent, if we have our children as a spiritual being, our responsibility is to let the music go on and on so that God can have a beautiful dance with our children. But also, because we are also a spiritual being and our children are our heritage, that's why actually we are in that dance as well. Why I picked the title of Dance with Our Children? Because tonight, I'm not going to tell you the formula of 1, 2, 3 to become a good parent. I can't. Because my children have a different temperament than your children, and my personality is different from yours, and our whole family situation may be different. So today, instead of telling you the formula of 1, 2, 3, I'm going to tell you what are the struggles our young people are facing today. With an understanding, when I give you a general landscape, then you will fine-tune it yourself. Just like if I'm telling you the words, you know, it's like 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3. Sometimes your partner will be dancing a little bit, make a turn, or sometimes the music may go faster. So instead of, as long as I teach you the basic step of 1, 2, 3 of the words, I want you to dance with your own children, just like when you're doing your cooking, you put a pinch of salt here or some sugar here, or when you are making doing a painting, sometimes you use broad strokes, sometimes you use fine touch here and there. Parenting is a piece of art. It's a dance. It's a dance of art and science. So today I'm going to tell you, because now I actually in a church, in SCBC, Markham Transfer Baptist Church, I've been using 12 weeks to deliver adult Sunday school parenting workshop with them, and also with Gindo, some of you know, it's a seminar course that I've delivered. So I'm going to tell you almost 20 hours of materials squeezed into just 1 or maybe 1.5 hours. So if I really speak very fast, please wave your hand, Pastor Teresa, please slow down. I cannot catch up anymore. But having that passion, I want to let you know as much as possible. That's why I may not be able to go deep into each point, but as to give you a general landscape of what our children are facing today. Okay? So as long as you know it, then you know how to dance with your children. So let me give you some facts before I go into that. We are finding more and more of the children that grew up in the church that they drop their faith when they are getting to teenage stage. And we may wonder why. And there are a lot of surveys that are trying to find out the reason why. And I'm going to show you one of them. Actually, I'm studying Fuller now, so I'm giving you from the Fuller Youth Institute that they have done a survey called the College Transition Project. What they are having is they have 69 graduates from the high school youth group that when they move on to the college, that they follow them for 3 years, the same person, longitudinally, okay? So to see what is the changes. And also, they that is through a survey, but then they also have interviewed 45 of them that have graduated from the youth group to understand what has been happening for those 3 years. Why is that we have so many of our youth and our children drop out from their faith when they move on to college? And the finding is that out of this group, 40 to 50% of the youth group graduates, they failed. That means they cannot stick with the faith in college. Well, you may say, well, you still have another 50 to 60% that they are still having the faith, you know, keep up the faith in church when they're in the college. But then the second point is quite alarming. 80% of them intended, those ones that drop out, 80% of them, they intend to go to church. They intend to have their faith. They may be the youth group leaders. They may be worship team members. They may be very active members in the youth group. They don't intend to drop their faith. 80% of them, they say that, oh, I will go to church, I will go to college. But somehow, they fail. So what is happening? And 30 to 60% of them, they may return to faith, but at their late 20s, when they may be going into their adulthood. But at that time, many of them, they may have different priorities. As a higher priority than faith. It may be the career, the family, the different lifestyle. Even though they come back to church, they may not be putting faith as the top priority. Then we'll see, how about Canada? How about our Canadian youth? So this is another very popular and famous report, a survey that we have done. You know, if you talk to a lot of the youth workers, you will hear about when they talk about hemorrhaging faith report. Why is it that we are using the term hemorrhaging? Hemorrhaging means internal bleeding. Internal bleeding means that it is within your body and that is bleeding. Because what they're saying is they are trying to have a survey to see those children that are growing up in the church itself, that maybe even from baby or when they were very young, they already come to church. They've always been coming to Sunday school, children's choir, awareness club, just name it, you know, the parents are fellowship, they will come. And somehow, they drop out from their faith. And there are a lot of question marks. Why? Why is that? As a parent, as a pastor, as a counselor, as teachers, we have been putting our sweat, blood, and tears into nurturing them. So why? And so that is called the hemorrhaging faith. And when they're looking at it, it is commissioned by the EFC. EFC stands for Evangelical Fellowship of Canada, the EFC. The EFC youth and also the Young Adult Ministry Roundtable, they have this survey. And it's come up with a report, 130-something pages. And what they're looking at is the Canadian race Christians from 18 to 34 years old. You say, wow, 34 is still adolescent? Later on, when I go through the next few slides, you will notice that. Yeah, in our days, you know, when you are moving out of the teens, so when you're moving out of the 19 or 20s, you are already going towards adulthood. But now, no more. A lot of the survey find that our children, even in the mid-20s or late 20s or even in the early 30s, they are not still mature enough to be qualified as an adult. It is, they are still qualified as an adolescent. So we are going to see what, you know, so that is the target group. So the survey is saying how many have failed, have dropped the faith, and how many stay in the faith, and how many are returning. And why is that they are dropping from the faith, and when did it happen? And of course, at the end, they will have some recommendation. The church and the family, the parents should be doing something to help our young children to come back, our young people to come back. But that is the hemorrhaging faith. And because it's such a big report, I could not repeat the whole thing, but I just point out some of the highlighted ones. It's saying that because it has done the survey on Catholics, mainline Protestant, and also evangelical Protestants. Okay, so I'm just picking most of them is evangelical results. It's saying that 1 out of 5 Catholics attend church weekly. And for the evangelical church, it's 1 out of 3 that attend church weekly. And you say, wow, it's not bad. You know, we are better than the Catholics. But still, look at it. We have 2/3 of our young people dropping out from their faith when during this adolescent period. And while the U.S., they're having 50 to 60% of them are still keeping the faith, we have only 1/3. We are doing much worse than the U.S. And then we'll find that more boys are dropping out from their faith than girls. We always think that the greatest drop is during the transition into the college. But the finding, they say, is not. It is at the age of your children. Your children are upstairs now. It's the transition between between when they were grade 6 into the junior high. Wow, it is quite alarming. If we don't do anything now, look at the European churches. 50 years ago, they are so strong, okay? They even send missionary to China, to all those places. They've got beautiful churches, but what happened now? Because at the time, 50 years or 100 years ago, they put all the resources, all the time, into building a big church and also into the adult ministry without putting investing into the young life ministry. And then after 50 or 100 years ago, we only left, if you go there, you see that just a few old folks are praying in the church, or maybe one buses, tourist bus after another, with the tourists taking snapshots, taking pictures there. If we don't do anything, no matter how big our church is, no matter how well you're doing your adult ministry, one day our church will be like the European churches, that it is going to be empty, just as a way for the tourists to take pictures. And also, one thing is, God has given children to us as our heritage. And if we don't put our best effort to nurture our young people and walk along with them to keep the music going, to continue this dance, one day, you know, all of us has to be before the throne of the Lord. And the Lord is asking, hey, what have you done? Have you tried your best to lead your child to me? Will we scratch our head and say, oh, sorry, I forgot? Or maybe are we saying that my child is really too challenging, just like Zhang Ying, right? So I don't know. I feel so bad for him, you know. Even though I'm not his friend, you know, but I feel so bad for him. I think he is going through a very tough time. Yeah, but I will be so challenging that we say I'm going to give him or give her up. That's why. But one day, all of us have to stand before the throne of the Lord and give an account to the Lord. What have we done to our children? So, if we decided that we have to do something to help our children in the growth, I'm going to cover 4 areas. And first one is, those are the factors that is affecting the youth, our youth spiritual development. It may be the cultural, psychosocial, spiritual, and physiological. So mind you that, you know, as I've said, I'm going to emphasize more tonight on this area so that you have an overall understanding of it. But at the end, you know, I may have 5-10 minutes to squeeze in some of the suggestions that I find maybe work, okay? But so please bear with me that I may speak very fast, but no, it will be mainly focused on this area. But you know, there are so many things that are affecting our young people. And I'm going to show you a video. That video, if you have been to my preaching, if you have been to my workshop, you will know. But I tell you, I've seen this video at least 50 times. Even more than that, I know, because I've been using this many times. But every time, it is still speaking to me. And I hope that if you leave this room tonight, if you forget everything that I said, it's okay. But don't forget the image that you are going to see in this video. It is about a mountain lion that chased a bear and put your child into the role of that bear. And you see how alarming it is. If no matter how desperate it is, no matter how rebellious he is, if we give him or her up, the mountain lion is going to take him. The evil ones is going to take him. So I'm going to show you the video. Please. So every time, if you've seen this before, remind yourself again. This is your child. Never give them up. That is the world is trying in every way to take our young people away. You can see how helpless and hopeless the bear is taking away. Thank you. this is my more than 50th time that I watched it. Every time it almost brought tears to my eyes. Not only is like we are the bear, you know, and our Heavenly Father always watches over us, even though we are thinking that we are so desperate, so hopeless, and our Heavenly Father is watching over us. But also when we turn from another angle, that child is our own children. What will happen if the mother bear doesn't stand at the end of the line there? For sure, the bear will be, the little one will be, you know, like captured by the mountain lion. You know, the world is trying to grab our children. When it seems that, I think, you know, like, even if you hear the news, I don't know what is the reaction of Lam San Ying. I think it is so desperate and so rebellious that I really want to give up, like, let her go, you know, like, let her go. Give it up. But at any time if we try to give it up, what will happen? So if you leave this room, forget everything I say, just imagine the last scene. Always have it in your mind. See it 3 times, 4 times, 10 times, like what I've done. Always, whenever you want to give up on any one of your child, remember that image. Never give up on any one of them. Understand? Promise? So now I'm going to tell you what are these factors that are trying to grab our children. So first of all, I try to touch on cultural. And I try to go through it really fast because some of them, you know it already, okay? So one of them is postmodernism. In our days, you know, we call, maybe even before my time, let's call modernism. They use tests, they use experiments to test the things out. And that is how they say there's an absolute truth on a certain thing. Absolute truth. Everything is black and white. But with our children nowadays, they feel, okay? That's one of the videos my son showed me. You see, you know, even Bruce Lee, they feel, you know, everything is relative. They feel it. They don't use their senses. They say there's no absolute truth. I'm right, you're right, and there's a gray area. So the same thing for their faith, for the Bible teaching. I'm right, my Muslim friend, the belief is right too. I'm respecting them. Yes, you could respect them, but you should also have your own standpoint. But now these days with the postmodernism, our young people say, no, you cannot be so judgmental and condemn other people. And they don't have their own standpoint, and that is postmodernism impacting them. Consumerism. And because with so many of the commercial is telling them that your thing is getting old, just put it aside and get a new one. So when our children are still having iPhone 5 in their hand, they say, Mom, get me an iPhone 6. Okay? So it's nonstop. They always want to get a new one. But with the same attitude of consumerism, they are also applying that to their faith. If the church or if this group doesn't feed what I need, I go to another one. Just they should feed. They should satisfy what I want. So that is the impact of their consumerism. And also they say, wow, I've got money that I can do anything. But in faith, it is by grace. Not by how much, how rich you are, how gifted you are. But they have been already wired in that sense that consumerism is hitting them real hard. And information explosion, you know that. So much that the social media, the anything, you know, even now, you know, every time when I ask my husband, how do you write this Chinese word, or how do you say this, every time my husband, the response is the same. Check with Google. Yeah. Even before, after that, I know you want to say check with Google. So even adult is like this. For our children, yes, it is okay to have information, but they need adult to guide them through what is right and what is wrong. There's so a lot of good information, but there are also a lot of bad information on the internet. They need adult to guide them. And the time pressure, I don't have to say, you know, actually in a few slides I'll talk a little bit more about tighter parenting. And our children, they are so busy all the time. Busy, you know, even as adults, you know, when I try to arrange to meet a sister in the church, she's busy, I'm busy, and all the time we say, oh, sorry, busy bees, we could not meet up again, you know. So our children, we are pushing our children very much to the limit. Every gap that they have, a gap in the timetable, it has been filled, and which I'll go through a little bit more later. But religion, have you heard that our children are saying that, I am religious, no, I'm spiritual, but I'm not religious. I'm spiritual, but I'm not religious. I think it's sometime around last year when I'm doing my preparing my workshop, and then my husband, you know, because he was watching the TV, and said, hey, watch this. And there's a journal, a special on TV. It's saying that now, you know, one of the fastest spiritual group that has been growing, you know what it said? I think it says that it's starting from Australia. Every Sunday, this group, you know, many, many different groups, they are worshiping. They gather together for worship, but there's no God. They're not worshiping any God. They're just saying that we are a group of good people. We are not saying that there's no God, but it's just that we are not worshiping God. And with the hymns, we are singing Jesus Loves Me, This I Know. You know what's the hymn that they're singing, at least from the TV special that time. They're singing John Lennon's Imagine. So, you know, like, there's no God in their group. But then it is, they are saying that they're spiritual. So it is the trend that is like this. So for our children, they are very, very confused. They say, yeah, as long as I'm spiritual, I know there's a God, but I don't know, is it my parents' God? Or is it maybe my classmates' Muslim's God? Okay? So they're very confused. And then it is the, they are radical autonomy. Our young people at this stage, they don't want to stick with a particular group. And I say, if there's a group that has a certain kind of rules or, you know, whatever expected from their members, then I don't want to be in that group. Because the young people, they don't want to be fixed. Because like the because again, they are being affected by the postmodernism. There's no standpoint. So also, I don't want, as a consumer, I don't want to stick with one group. If it doesn't, I don't feel like it, then I can leave that group. So I can come in and out, in and out. So for them, the faith matter is also the same thing. If you like, you can draw down this diagram. Actually, this is a new diagram that I just learned from my professor 2 weeks ago. Okay, I just came back from LA. This is called the tightrope model. What it is saying is that we said that it's only 13 or 14 before they move into the adolescent stage. But now it's because of puberty. It's getting earlier and earlier. Even around 11 or 12 years old that they start their puberty. And that is the marker for them to be entering into the adolescent stage. Okay? So, and then you can see that it is stretching all the way. The middle part is the adolescent. The other part is like mid-20s or even late-20s. That is the end of the adolescence, and then that is the adulthood. So what is it saying? It's a tightrope. You know what's a tightrope? And you have two poles there, and there's a line, and then people are walking across. Someone is walking across Niagara Falls. I don't know if you watch it. Okay? So that is the tightrope. Okay? So before they were 12 years old, they are so dependent. Okay? So it is very stable because they depend on the adults to give them the autonomy. You know, there's no autonomy. Actually, they're very stable, relying on the parents. But then, during the puberty stage, they are moving the thinking from very concrete thinking to abstract thinking. And it's at this point that they will start to think. They will start to think, who am I? They will start to search more about their self-awareness. Who am I? And then at this time, they know that they have to walk alone because they have to search. They start to find that there's a me here. I better find out who is that me here. And someone could not help you find out that me. So that's why they're thinking that I have to become independent. That's why you see that many of the young people at this stage, they turn suddenly, you know, there's a book called Suddenly 13. Suddenly they get into a stage, the brain and also the chemistry in the body, that starts to make them aware that I have to walk alone and to become very independent on this path during this adolescent stage in order to find myself. So that's why this is the time that they may feel very lonely. And if what we call is social capital. What does it mean by capital? Capital is the money in your bank, you've got a house or whatever, it's the resources that you can rely on. Okay? The same thing. For the children, for our young people, we are their social capital. Social capital. As the parents, as the teachers, as the adults around them, we are the social capital. We are the ones that could help them cross this adolescent stage. But, you know, it's just like when you're crossing the tightrope, you need an umbrella, you need, sometimes you see people holding something like star, a big pole, right, to help them get across the tightrope. Actually, they need us. But a lot of times, they think that they don't need us. This is the time they have to be independent. And that's the time they show that they are very indifferent to us and push us away. And then they have to walk very, like, lonely, with pain, and also carefully across that period. And it's especially in the middle part, the mid-adolescence, that is around 19 to 21, that a lot of them have the most struggle, and which I'm going to cover a little bit later on. And until they get into the adulthood, and then it's also the brain. They start to not just aware of who they are. And also it's because of the brain development, which I'll be telling you a little bit later on, that they start to be aware of what other people see who they are. Okay? Before, at the adolescent stage, they only see who they are. But when they're moving towards the late adolescent stage, they start to see how other people see, the people around them, how other people see who they are. So when they notice how other people see who they are, then they'll start to realize that they cannot just be independent. They have to be interdependent. That means they have to rely on one another. And that is the time that they become stable again. And that is the time we call it enter into a real adulthood. And many of the young people, because they struggle so much during this adolescent time, that they could not safely get across to a real adulthood. So that's why many of the young people, they have issues, which I'm going to show you in the next diagram as well. But that is the autonomy. But also, at this time, the next one, is the identity. Okay? When we were young, the identity is given to us. Okay, say for example me, I'm a Chinese that I was born in Hong Kong, and I am sure I am a girl, okay, a woman. But now, with our young people at home, they are Chinese. In school, they think that they are Caucasian. For a certain teacher, they are a goody-goody boy. But when they are among with their friends, they say, wow, I don't like my skirt is my uniform, school uniform is so long, rolled it up into short skirt. So it seems that when they are searching for their identity, for us it's much easier. For them now, some of them even have the transgender, that you're even changing sex. So it's not as simple as us, as the ABC, as what we are having. So what they're saying is, that there's a house, okay? There are many windows. When the child, when they were young, 12 years old, you know, that stable part, okay, that pole there, there's a candle, okay? The candle is outside the house. The house is the self-awareness, awareing of who they are, okay? And there's a candle here. When they were young, your family, even though you are a girl, your family, your dad told you, you are a boy, then somehow you'll be brainwashed and thinking that you're a boy or whatever. So your identity somehow, you don't care so much. It's whatever your parents or the people around you that are telling you, whatever your identity is. You are not so much aware of them. But when you are going into the puberty stage, you start to think, hey, who am I? What is my identity? And then the candle start to move into the house. That is the self-awareness. And you see there are many windows, right? And for our young people during the adolescent stage, they are having one candle per window. That is, it is not having one candle inside the house that you look through from different windows. Actually, at each of the windows, there is one separate candle. Because they start to think, they start to realize there's a self, but they have multiple selves. I could be like this, I could be like that, so who am I? So if you look at our young children, our young people during that adolescent time, actually you are just like standing at different windows. Look at the candle. There's a different candle at each of the windows. And there's no bridge from one candle to the next. And they cannot connect. Who am I, you know, like, am I Chinese or am I Caucasian? When they could not resolve that identity issue, when that is the problem, when they could not cross over to the adulthood stage. When it is the real adulthood, the few candles will emerge into one. So eventually, when you have a healthy process, you know, into a journey, going into adulthood, all these candles eventually from different windows will be collaborate into one candle. So if you look from each candle, look from each window, you only see one candle, but you'll be seeing different side of the same candle. You'll see that, you'll say that, oh, even adult is like this, you know, when I'm home, that I would just dress very casually, when I'm out for a banquet, then I dress up very, you know, like very beautifully, elegantly. But no, you still have your core self. You understand what I'm saying? So it's just a different occasion, you just present a different core self to other people. You are still an adult. You still have a core self that you can go back to, if you like, and put on a mask, but still, you know that you are putting on a mask. That is your core self. But for our young people, no, they're actually having different selves. And when they cannot resolve that, and sometimes it will be led to have their mental health issues when they're getting when they cannot move out from the adolescent stage into the adulthood. And that may be one of the reasons that they cannot resolve that multiple selves issue. Understand what I'm saying? So this is, this is the psychosocial part, but when it talks about the cultural, how people look at the identity, I just introduced this here as well, so that you have an understanding when I go on to talk about the rest, okay? So that's the cultural part, and let's look on. How about psychosocial? Psychosocial is psychologically, and how is the interaction that they have with the people around them, okay? And you notice that there are a lot of family dynamics that have been changed from our days. Like, at least for me, you know, for me, my mom, she's not working. But now, many of the families, they have both of the parents are working. When you have both parents working, that's the family dynamics will be changed. That the whole household will be, the schedule will be much tighter, and then the mother will not be as submissive as at the olden times, maybe with more voices, you know. So there are different things that will be introduced when you have the dual working parents. And also, regretfully, more and more families, they are divorced, or maybe when the children were still young, the parents die from cancer, car accident, and all that. They have got the bereaved families. And even make it more complex, when there's the single parent families, they remarried and have the step family, step parent, and step sibling. And some of them, because of the career, that they have to, one of the parents have to work somewhere else, and they're actually missing that parent. And even worse, some of them have two moms and two dads, and the same sex parents. So all this, you know, I won't go into the detail of it, but I want to let you understand. Those are the things our young children are facing. Those are the struggles. You know, if you go home, you think about it. Every point is affecting our children. And then I just very briefly go through the tiger parenting. Actually, last year I've done a research thesis on this for my assignment. I have done a 62 pages of thesis on this. What is the impact of tiger parenting on children? It is quite interesting, and I find that, you know, like it is actually a form of book. Which is called The Battle Hymn of Tiger Mother. Is that's an American Asian, Amy Cha. She is very bright. She came from, I think, Taiwan. Okay, Taiwan. And then she's very bright herself. Came to U.S. when she was young, and she married a very bright lawyer, Jewish lawyer. And they've got two very beautiful, very smart children, daughters. But she is using the way is extremely controlling parenting style to push them to the very, very top achievement. And she's always saying, my way is the highway. No birthday party for my children. No any phone calls from the peers. Once it's out when they are off from school, they have to work, either towards the piano, because her eldest daughter is so bright that she's playing her piano piece in New York, the best concert hall with an orchestra. You can see how top they are. So at first I thought that I'm a tiger mom. So when I look at it, I say, wow, I'm not a tiger as she is. So I feel better, you know. Actually, last week I talked to my son. No, he's now in Calgary. And say, I'm going to make a parenting workshop tonight. Just tell me honestly, am I a tiger mom? Maybe he's just kind to me and said, oh, mom, you're not a tiger mom. You just try to give us all the opportunities to explore ourselves. I said, wow, good son. So give him a sticker, okay? And then you say, like, that one, you know, like, why there are different parenting style? Why I pick this one is because somehow, even though we are not really, I admit as myself, I confess myself, even though I'm not 100% a tiger mom, but I have a hint, a little bit, you know, of a tiger mom trait in me. I think many of the Asian parents are like this. Go, 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 go. You know, have you done this? No, if you got 95%, where's the 5%? This is what I've done to my children, okay? So it seems that they always push their children for the top achievement, and they're very low in responsiveness. That means even when their children are tired, when they emotionally, they need a hug from the mother, or they need a comfort, some downtime. But no, all the time, it is the parents don't care about what is happening to them, but always go for the best, go for the top achievement. And that is maybe, you know, like what is the reason, you know, for tiger parenting? It may be, you know, like they think that this is the only way that will make the children excel. And actually, when I do the research, New York Times, we think that there are many academic, there's such a lot of academic debates on it. I find so many journals debating on if this is tiger parenting is the right way. But believe it or not, New York Times is saying that, yeah, it's not that bad as you have thought. Because they're pushing the children, exploring their potential, going to the excellence, right? So there's many, many, many parents saying, ah, we have the genes, they've got our genes. So for sure, they will also be doing well, okay? And also some of them, you know, they say, the world is so competitive. You know, in China, they say that when you're applying for the kindergarten school, you have to submit that thick, a whole pile of certificates. Ballet, piano, singing, swimming, you know, those kind, you know, in your application, so as to boost the chance of being accepted into those well-known kindergarten school. So they say the world is so competitive, we have to. And also, you know, like, I used to be the top three in my class, so you better relive my glory, okay? I could not beat the other two. You better, that's an unfulfilled dream. You better do it, my son, you know, get the number one for me, okay? So it is also somehow is to fulfill their own kind of satisfaction. But then also, there may be life turmoil if there is some marriage issue, or maybe some of them, they are not some problem with their career. They don't feel they get the satisfaction. They want to use their children to fulfill that dream, to fill up. I will put all my hope on you. You better do well. Or maybe many, especially Chinese, we always think that, you know, our children, our offspring, is our life extension. 光宗耀祖, you better do well. And some immigrant families, they think, I put down my good job in Hong Kong, in China, in Taiwan. You know, now you better do well. We put all our hope in you. So there are many different reasons why there is tiger parenting. But let's see the next screen. What is the impact on this? Even though they're doing very well in school academically, but they have a depleted self-esteem. They don't think they're so good. Because even when they're getting 100%, their mom will say, that is not good enough because your classmate, two of your classmates is also getting 100%. You should have got a bonus so as to get 101 to end others to the top of the class. So somehow they always think that they're not doing good enough. And also somehow because the mom will say, you don't have to wash dishes, you don't have to do anything, just go to study. Okay. So a lot of things is the mom that helped them to resolve, or the father helped them to resolve. That they did have a poor problem-solving skill. And because of this, always there's a fight, you know, like when my children were younger, always I ask them, hey, have you practiced your piano? Have you done your Kumon? Da, 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 da. So in a way, we are always on our opposite sides, and as if we are fighting, okay? So of course, and we don't even sometimes have a chance for the whole family to sit down to enjoy the dinner. All the time, you know, rush for piano lesson, swimming lesson, here and there. So we don't even have the time to enjoy together as a family. How could we say that we could have a bonding within the family? And also when they're so busy, they don't even, every time when their friend calls them, okay, she's busy, and then you hang up. So still never have the chance to mingle with their friends, okay? And you know what? Even though they are not doing in front of you, whatever you're telling them not to do, they're actually going underground. One of my friend's daughter, she always wants to be a writer. But her parents always want her to be a doctor, lawyer, and all that. So whenever she's reading, then she'll be scolded. So that's why all the time she's using a blanket, using a flashlight to read. And one day at 14 years old, she ran away from home and then became a prostitute. Okay, so they're just turning underground, whatever you're doing. So, and sometimes they will become unethical because my mom always wants me to be first. My dad always wants me to be first. So even if I have to cheat, even if I know something, I don't share it with my friends so that they will have a lower mark than I am. They will be going unethical, okay? And they may even eventually, as they're growing up, they will have distorted characters like depression, eating disorders, bipolar, you know, some of this be developed. But then going to the other extreme, the self-esteem trap. Okay, I really like this, you know. I mean, I'm better than you, you know. Sometimes, you know, we are pressing our children so much, you're not good enough, I have to be number one. But all the other times, we think, oh, you're like our princess, you're so cool, you're always the best. You know, they are not the best, they always praise them, they're the best. So in a way, they're living in a bubble. They all the time think that, oh, I'm really so good, I'm the prince, I'm the princess. Okay, so they're living in a fantasy beyond them. And they think that they're superior to anyone. And I'm so important. And then we're seeing that they're also saying, wow, you see, I also enjoy my icons. I really like how I pick my icons. What is the list of things to do? Number one is win. Number two is win. Number three is win. So they're becoming so competitive because the parents are telling them that they're the prince, they're the princess. So I have to win, I have to be number one all the time. And but then at the same time, they're also criticizing themselves. Hey, even though you may not be good enough. So they're having this kind of something like bipolar, you know. Am I good, a prince or princess, or am I not, okay? And what is the problem with that? The problem is that because they always strive for perfectionism. Okay, perfectionism. And that's why they think that they're very proud of themselves. And also they think that they don't have to depend on other people. There's no such thing as interdependency. They focus so much on themselves that even if someone as they grow up, ask them to do any of the responsibility, they say, I'm too busy, because all the time it's the parents that help them. You know, almost like, oh, you are my prince, you are my princess. So it's all around in a big bubble, okay? So they don't take any adult responsibilities. But then one day they have to go out to work. And if they have always been living in a bubble, once the bubble is torn, your boss or whoever, they will not spoil you and tell you you are the prince or princess like your parents do. So once the bubble is popped, they'll realize that, hey, I'm not really as good as my teachers or my parents are telling me. And then all of a sudden, when the dream cannot be fulfilled, they may get into depression and they get into addiction and all those kind of issues. So we just have to be balanced, okay? And having talked so much about different types of parenting styles, you know, even though there are more types, but I just pinpoint those two because I find that many of us Asian parents maybe have some kind of trait of those two. But I also want to point out this one. There's something that we don't talk about so often, but that is very true. It's abandoned generation. When I first encountered this term, I'm quite negative about this. And I say, well, parents have been putting in our time, our effort, and our love and care to our children, and yet you're telling me that we have been abandoning our children? No way. And actually, I debated with my professor in front of my class. But then, the more I read into this, the more I observe the young people around us, and I find that it is true in a way. Because parents or the adult, we are thinking our children need us this way. But actually our young people need us another way. When it's not need, we think that we have already given them the best. And somehow the young people say, no, you have abandoned us. You haven't met our need. Like my professor has took 1 year off and went into a high school as a teacher so that he could get mingle with the high school kids to understand them a little bit better and ask them to write some reflective notes. And in one of them, the high school kid, that's what he wrote. He said, my father has been with me to the baseball practice 3 times a week, but I doubt. So the father has been really spending a lot of time and money on him. But then the young person said, but I doubt if he cares more about my achievement or does he care more about me. Maybe the parent, maybe the dad really care more about him. But if that is the way that he received the message, that he just took me to all this practice just because for relieve his glory, to fulfill his unfulfilled dreams before, his way is not being met, okay? So that's why the adolescent, they need us as a social capital. That's the word, social capital. We are this social capital, what they can rely on. Just remember I told you about the different candles. They don't know how to bridge the candles. We are as a social capital, as the adults around them, to help them to merge the candles into one. They need us, like walking across the tightrope. They need us to help them, like the umbrella to help them. But they have to walk by themselves. But they need us to be there, not to grab the hands and control them, but to walk alongside with them, dance with them. That's what I mean. Okay, somehow we neglect the needs of the adolescent. What are we neglecting the needs for? We neglecting the emotional and relational needs. All the time we think that we are giving you good food to eat, beautiful clothing. If you go out, we give you the ride. You don't even have to take the bus. We give you the best school. We give you the best extracurricular activities so they can get into a good university and all that. We think that we are giving them the best. But somebody say, Mom, Dad, what I need is a hug from you. What I need is some downtime without pushing me for piano practice, without pushing me for another swim meet. Let's just go out and have a walk. Let's talk. And that is what they need. But somehow, our expectation is different. That's why they could not meet with each other. And then they keep on saying that our parents have abandoned us. So when my professor, you know, when he tried to interview many of the high school students, even the very outside looks like very, they look like very joyful, happy, steady, and a high achiever. When he talks with them, he finds that, no, actually, I'm not as happy as other people thought I am. Their hurts, their loneliness, there's pain, there's anger inside. And they're saying that we have always been in an adult-driven, adult-controlled, micromanagement system. All our whole timetable is under our adult's agenda, under his schedule. Sometimes why they have to go to Saturday school? I'm already out of the class. Why I still have to go to Saturday class? Maybe the parents, I need the time to go to T&T for grocery shopping. So it's better to send you to the morning Saturday class. I can have some free time, right? So it is working around the adult schedule. And they find that actually adolescents, the inside the time clock, the body time clock, they could only start to function at around 9 to 10 o'clock, around 9 o'clock. But because dad has to go to work, you better get up at 7 o'clock. So no wonder in the high school, you know, if you look at the class, most of them, you know, in the first lesson, they are not functioning too well. And even in Sunday school, you find that the first Sunday school, usually they are not functioning too well. Because that is against their body clock. It's only according to adult schedule. And they find that, wow, it's all the time we try to meet whatever they're expecting for us. And we don't even have the time. They need the time to develop the internal self, to merge the candles into one, to walk across that tightrope. They don't even have the time to develop the internal self. And also, they don't even have the time, the unprogrammed downtime for family interaction. All the time, if there's only a little gap, the mom, the tiger mom will say, hey, you've got a little gap here. I just want to put you into a drawing class. That is just good. So if you have only one child, that is better. If you've got two children, sometimes you're fulfilling the gap of this one, and then other time you're running for the other child. So all the time, the parents seem so busy all the time. There's no downtime that you could not even enjoy the family time together. And that is actually the thing that they need most from us, is the emotional and also the relational need. Because they have a low or missing that social capital. Even maybe teachers, they're saying, oh, you better come in early because we want to train you to run the math Olympics or whatever, the inter-school competition, whatever. Or maybe even the counselor in the youth group, we want you to come in because, you know, like you have to practice the worship band. If we, as an adult, we emphasize on those things more than we emphasize on nurturing our young people, emotionally and relationally, they are thinking that we are abandoning them. And eventually, when they're so starved emotionally and relationally that they get so frustrated, and they even see the word betrayed. They find that they are even betrayed by adults. We don't understand them. We just use them as a piece of chess piece around their game. They find themselves being betrayed, and they could mistrust the adult. That's why every time when you find that, you know, why is that the adolescent, they a lot of times they like to close up their door. In a way, when they feel that they could not trust the adult anymore, they show a way which is indifferent so as to protect their own self. It's a way to protect themselves, okay? So, and also that's why the adolescent journey is being lengthened before it until 18 or 19 years old. But because of this, their lack, their starved emotionally and relationally. That's why I've been stressed to mid-20s or even late-20s. And then they actually go into a world that is called the world beneath. It's getting into the underground, okay? I tell you what does it mean by world beneath. But before that, I want to read you this, again, this is a quotation. My professor, you know, in high school, asked one of the high school, you know, can you write me a reflective note? And this is what he has written. He is a good kid in the high school. But especially look at those underlined ones that I talk about. It says, I just wish my real life were more like the person radiating from his mouth. Other people, they'll seem like actors and actresses in the same sick drama. It is the actor they see and not an image more fairly representative of my thoughts. I therefore suffer in silence, longing to be understood, but refusing to share. Such a nightmare with the unknowing. It is a lonely place in the mind of an unwilling actor. So he positioned himself as an unwilling actor in a sick drama. And then he decides to suffer in silence without sharing anything with the adults. So when you look at some of the youth, you know, why is that the Columbine High School? Why is that all of a sudden, you know, we always think that he's okay, he's a good kid. And why is that all of a sudden they take out a gun to go to do the shooting? It's the outside doesn't match the inside. There is a lot of turmoil going inside that we are not even aware of. So one day when it's come to a point, just like the whistling kettle, but it's up to a point that is to blow off the whistle, whee, and then we know the water is boiling. And that is the time that they explode without telling us. And then we say, oh, what's happening? And then we're saying that, what does the world believe? When they could not get themselves satisfied emotionally and relationally, then they will go into a structured social system with rules and values. Okay? It is an underground hidden society. If you may wonder how come our young people like to go to Facebook so much, Twitter or whatever, then you may understand. And sometimes, you know, like once I went to Beijing, okay, to have a tour. And then just the day when I arrived back in Toronto, my god sister already called me. Oh, you have a good time on the Great Wall. And it's, how do you know? So it's my daughter that has posted it on her Facebook, and the daughter of my best friend already looked at it and told my god sister. So she called me and said, oh, you have a good time on the Great Wall. Wow, I find that our young people, they just so openly explode themselves and let everyone see them. Why? It's because they're starved to be careful. Start to communicate. But all the time they're so busy, all the time that we don't even leave any downtime to communicate with them. So that they have to find a world underneath. And where they get the support from the adolescent. And there are some rules there, you know, without telling them, they know there's some kind of rules in this Facebook or Twitter or whatever world there is. And every time when they got hurt from the inner world, it's just like a tortoise. You know, whenever you touch it, it will just, you know, retract and get the limbs back into the shell. Whenever they get hurt, whenever they find that the adult, the social capital is low, it's hurting them, making them frustrated, then they will retreat back to this home base for safety. And the issues of world belief is that there is a lack of positive community association. And that is actually, they need the adults to walk along with them. They need the positive community association to help them go through. They become short-sighted. And also, they will show an indifferent attitude whenever the parents or the adults want to get close to this world belief. Maybe it's not Facebook, maybe they just daydream. But you could not get close to what they are daydreaming about. Okay? So they'll try to protect it. That's no wonder, you know, some parents told me that the young people refuse to be friends with them in the Facebook. Have you heard that? Yeah. Okay. They don't want their parents to know about them. They put a bar there. Your brother don't come here. You know, this is my world. Okay. So look at the place spinner. You know, have you seen those? You know, those acrobats. They are putting on the plate, spinning on those rods. There are many of them. If you are not careful, you know, one of them will fall down. They are as busy as a plate spinner. There's so many things going on in their life, extracurricular activities, youth groups, academics, to be, like they start to be a girlfriend, or they have to be a daughter. So there's so many things in their life that they have to keep everything spinning. But the thing is, if you look closely, it's not big enough. They're all smiling. Even though it's very challenging, you know, to keep all the plates going, spinning without falling down. They just pretend from outside that it is easy, it's no big deal, it's not that bad, it's okay. So they're even forced to pretend that they are happy without us understanding what they have been going through. Okay? So, the next one. So that is the part about the so-called psychosocial. Okay. So I go through very quickly because I want you to get an overall picture of it. Okay. So sorry if I have to run very fast because these are my 20 hours of material. So I try to speak as fast as I can to go into each one of them. So this one about the spiritual side. Okay. About the spiritual side over church and. Open church, it's, even my children, they were like this, you know, when they were young, from Monday to Friday, they go to a Christian school. And then Saturday, they come to fellowship with the parents. And on Sunday, they come to Sunday school, and sometimes they even go to Awareness Club, Children's Choir. So from Monday to Sunday, they may sometimes even see the same group of classmates, okay? Actually, hear me very, very clearly. I never say that it is not good to nurture our children more spiritually. Otherwise, all the senior pastors will come after me. You're telling the parents not to take the children and all like to Sunday school. No, that's not what I mean. What I mean is, if as parents, as teachers, as counselors, as pastors, if we just let it become the head knowledge up here, without moving down 8 inches down here to the heart. Which is the root of the spiritual the development. You know what will happen if they just stay there? It will become Tao Dai San Sai, a big head guy, you know, like walking around thinking that they're very good in Bible knowledge, and they will even criticize the Sunday school teacher. You are not pronouncing it right with the Old Testament book. That's not how you pronounce it. Oh yeah, right. Okay, and then using this as a bullet, as a weapon, one day, when they are becoming adolescent, they become very critical. They just use this to, like, shooting gun across the Christians. Hey, Dad, you tell me not to be greedy, and every time when you go to McDonald's, you take that sick a deck of napkins. Okay? So, you know, all the time they can use everything. They can even memorize the whole Bible verse to criticize you. You're not doing right. So, but without helping them to come from here to hear the Bible teaching, they're being over church. That's what I mean. Okay? So don't trust my word, otherwise I'll be in trouble. Okay, I cannot go to any church to do my serving, okay? Another word is gospel of sin management. Actually, this term is coming from the famous Christian author, Douglas Willis, is saying that, you know, even for adults, for Christians, many of us, we are having, what is gospel to us? Many of us is how to manage our sin. What does it mean by manage our sin? Is there are a lot of do's and a lot of don'ts. As long as you do all these do's, as long as you don't do all these don'ts, then you'll get the gospel. Then you get the salvation. And if we are thinking of this way, our children, if we don't help them to move from the head down to the heart there, they will also take the salvation as a gospel of sin management. You know, many of our children, they came here when they were a baby. They learn about forgiveness before they understand that they are a sinner. So they just thought, okay, I've already got forgiveness. As long as I don't do the don'ts and do the do's, then I'm a Christian. But so it's a performance-driven faith. So they would just serve in a youth group, go to Sunday school faithfully, memorize all the 66 books in the New Testament. They perform so well in our wellness club. Wow, I have badges even up on their head, you know, so many badges. But performance-based can only serve that much. Until they go to college, until they don't care about this performance anymore, it is like a Jesus jacket. What does it mean by Jesus jacket? They just put on the faith and act like a Christian, act perform like a Christian when there are Christians around them, when they're with the parents or with the counselors and whatnot. For one, why is it that many of them, when it goes to college, they start to have the issue? It's because if it is the skin, okay, you cannot tear off your skin, right? It has become part of you. But if it is the jacket, you can easily toss it off. Hey, no, my parents are not around. No one is around watching over me. So it's okay. I really want to go to try out the rave party. I don't know what's that like. I really want to try a little bit of the pot. Taking the pot and see what's like. Take off the Jesus jacket and try some of the bad things. And they think, oh, it's okay, you know, when I have to put on the jacket again, I'll put it on. But once when they have put the Jesus jacket aside at the corner, they'll feel guilty. They'll feel shameful. And it's not as easy as to put it back on again. So our main thing, you know, like whether it's open church or whether it's gospel sin management, whether it's Jesus jacket, the main thing is we have to connect our children, have a direct relationship with God. God only has children. God doesn't have grandchildren. If our children only go through parents, go through us to have a relationship with God, they are only grandchildren of God. And in the Bible, there's no such thing. God only has children. Okay? So that's why help them to have that direct relationship, connection with God, not just only through us. And this is something I do with the church, and this is called a Mickey Mouse ear model. Okay? You see, this Mickey Mouse has a face here, and it has the Mickey Mouse ear around. What we are seeing is a lot of the American churches now, they start to reflect and find that one of the problems that they have done incorrectly as a mistake for the young life ministry is that they are separating our young people from the rest of the the community faith group, okay? That they have it's all good intention. They've got their own youth worship, their own youth group, their own whatsoever. That they'll concentrate just on Sunday school without mingling with any adults, without serving any young ones. But one day, when they have to go to college, they have to mingle and interact with the adults. They've never learned to do so. They've always been with their own peers. So they become orphans. And a lot of times, if they cannot find a church that they could merge into in the university, in the college, that they would just join the campus crusade and those. Those are good, okay? Those are good. But the thing is, there is something called summer. And during summertime, those 4 months, as they come back, they could not go back to the youth group of their church. But they find that they could not merge into the adult group as well. They become orphans. And they could not see their peers all along with them. And it's just like the Mickey Mouse ear. There are different men ministry, women's ministry, children ministry, youth ministry, mission ministry. Every one of them is sharing the same premises, the church premises, use the same room. This is a Sunday school room on a children for children on Sunday. This also now as an adult. So we share the same premises, we share the same budget, same pastors or whatever. But somehow, each different ministry, they don't talk to each other. It's a silo. Actually, it's very damaging to our young people. We actually try to help our young people, but because we separate them so much from the adult. Actually, they need to look up to them. They need to be the social capital to help them to merge the candles, to walk across the tightrope. But they're missing them. And that's why, you know, that is the... I could not go into too much detail to talk about it because of time. But think about it, you know, if it's your church, that don't do the Mickey Mouse ear model. And then the last one is physiological. I'm not a doctor, like Esther or Dr. Esther here, no, you're a doctor, I'm not a doctor, so don't tease me, okay? I only read the books, okay? But then I try to explain it from very much a layman term, how I explain it, okay? So, it's like this. This is your brain, okay? This is your brain. This is the back of your brain stem, and this is the frontal lobe. What they're saying is that when a baby was born, they were born with a lot of brain cells, and that is called neurons, okay? Neurons here, you can see. Those are the brain cells. But it doesn't connect with one another. It's just have the brain cells. So when there's something, they don't saw something, they don't understand what it is. But whenever they see something new, whether it's a new message, throughout the growing period, it will grow, have something called a dendrite, okay? With like the branches out to receive the new message. And then also it will connect, pass that message from one brain cell to another brain cell through the axon, okay? That is the line here, okay? And also throughout this whole process of growing, development, there is something like a shield of something like insulation, like the fatty cells protect this axon, so that the message could be traveled faster. Okay, and let's get what I'm saying. So they say that at the adolescent stage, because they're growing more and more of these branches, the more you use a certain path, the faster the message will be sent, will be stronger. And also because of that the myelination, the fatty things, the myelin, is making the message go even faster. So at that adolescent time, if whatever is not being used too much, it will prune some of the branches that you don't use so much, okay? So that's it. So for adolescents, actually they say that they're only 80% done with their brain development. And the connectivity, because they have to connect cells to the cells, right? It's starting from the back to the front here. And that is the frontal lobe. And the frontal lobe is responsible for looking after your emotion, looking after the decision making, having the insights to see how, interpret how other people see you, and evaluate if it is something that is risky, okay? But then also at this time, there's something called like a pleasure center, you know, that is in the brain here. Whenever that we see something that is exciting, it is good, then it will generate, release a thing called dopamine, okay? Dopamine is something that will make you feel, wow, it is good, there's something to be rewarded, okay? Make you feel excited. Okay, if you are the youth, if you're standing at on the top of the cliff, you see at the bottom there's a pool of, like, blue water, and you're so hot, and you say, and your dopamine is telling you, wow, jump into it, you're hot, and it's so beautiful, okay? But as an adult, you're telling yourself that you better don't jump into it because it's a cliff. You will fall onto the rock and you will become paralyzed. Don't do that. But because it is up here in the frontal lobe, so adolescents, they're especially sensitive to dopamine, hypersensitive to dopamine at this time. So it is telling you, wow, it is having a good reward. Jump into it. And the message is traveling from the back telling it, don't do this. But the message is not traveling fast enough to the frontal lobe here to put a brake onto it and say, don't do it. That's why a lot of our youth, they just think that, you know, they are having a mood swing, they are being impulsive, and they do a lot of dangerous acts, is because it is not travel fast enough to put a brake onto the frontal lobe here. So if you understand this, don't be too mad at your child if they say something that is very hurtful to you, because they haven't evaluated what is the sequence, how hurtful it is when they say something like this. They're being so impulsive. Okay, so don't be mad at them. That is part of the development. It's only 80% developed the whole brain. So the frontal lobe here is not well developed. And there are quite a number of new books these days on about teenage brain. Okay, before we talk about hormones, now we talk about the brain. Okay, so having said all this, you know, I just give you 5 minutes because I know I'm running out of time. Some of the suggestions, you know, like how we could dance with our children. And I said, you know, you see this lady, you see, is doing the weaving, okay? Have faith as part of the fabric of the life. Instead of putting it on a jacket, makes it so much that they could not take it off. It's in their everyday life, every moment, that they are being encountered with faith, okay? Role modeling, we heard a lot about how parents are the most influential person in the whole wide world to your children. Even though they may slam the door on you, don't talk to you, but still, you are the most influential person in the whole wide world to your children. So, I just want you to write this down, okay, this sentence if you have write this down. And I find it very useful. How could we be a role model to our child? Imagine this. If I were on trial for being a Christian, what evidence could my kids offer to convict me? That means now if I'm standing in front of a court and somebody saying that, are you a Christian? And then having your child be your defense lawyer and saying that my mom is a Christian because da 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 da. Whenever you think of this question, then you know how you react as a role model. Because they're so close to you, they see you so much in detail. How could your child stand up for you as your defense lawyer to say that you are a Christian? Okay, the next one. And spirit of forgiveness. They may be running, sorry, I have to make the example from them, the family again. So I think, you know, no matter how big the mistake his daughter has made, say that Jesus is bigger than any mistake. Forgive them. Tell them that Jesus is bigger than any mistake. But it doesn't mean that you are, you know, like being spoiling them. If they make any mistake, it's okay. But, you know, you see a bowl? Have one hand have the ribbon of grace. Another hand have the ribbon of discipline. Balance with grace and discipline and tie a beautiful bowl together. Understand? Okay. Develop a very warm relationship at home. And if you ask me, I've made many mistakes, you know, for my children. But if I have to give you any tips that I've done it right, I tell you, I've done this. I try, at least I try. We have family rituals. Okay. Let them know that develop a very warm relationship. Of course, sometimes we will have fights, but try your best to develop a warm relationship at your home. Maybe it's a camping trip, maybe it's a fishing trip, but in our house, we have developed something. You could develop, be creative and develop your own family rituals. For myself, every Christmas Eve, when my children were very, very young, at 11:45 on the Christmas Eve, we sing Christmas carol, da 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 da, all the way across, like countdown, across the Christmas day. It's just like people when they're coming down for the New Year's Eve, we come down for the Christmas Eve, we sing Christmas carol. So even though now my children, they're very grown up now, they have boyfriend and girlfriend going out on Christmas Eve day for worship and what, they know that they have to come back at 11:45. And then we sing the Christmas carol together. That's what happened. We have this year. And also every New Year, we have the family altar on the New Year day to do New Year resolution. And on the Thanksgiving day, we have to count your blessing, the family altar. And also we play board games. And our favorite game is Cool Games. And we are very competitive. We play many Cool Games. We actually have a sheet marked down what is the date, and on that night, how many games we'll play, and who is the winner. Okay, we have played at least 200 or 300 of the Cool Games, and we mark it down. We are becoming so competitive. And so far, the score, my son is the highest scorer, my daughter the second, Don't tell my husband, I tell you, I'm the third, okay? Not that my husband is not good, he's the fourth, but he's just a lot of times didn't try his best, okay? But, you know, develop some kind of a warm relationship with your kids. And also, be a hub for their peers. Invite the young people over. Then you can see how their friends are. And also, when you're driving them around, I don't ask you to tell them, but you can hear what they're talking about, and it's very interesting. Yeah, okay? So you know what their world is, okay? And also, have developed that spiritual atmosphere, have the family order. And I tell you, like, in our, when our children were young, we have it, I know some families, they have it every day. I have that every night, we're reading the Bible story with them, but we only do it once every week, okay? But I tell you, when my children, they are going through stormy season in their faith journey, it is through how we have been building on the family altar since they were young. They relay to us the prayer request and how we could support each other at that time. So please, start it. It is really something you've asked to share with you. Anything that is working for my family, that is the family altar. And also have some rituals, you know, for laying hands. And when I have thyroid, I've got bad cells on my thyroid. So I have to, at that time, we don't know if it's cancerous cells. 4 years ago, before my surgery, my children lay hands on me. They pray for me. And when I go on short-term mission, my children lay hands on me as if they're sending out a missionary. And when I left my daughter at U.S. for her study, after setting up the apartment, we feel so bad for her. She knows no one in the city. All I could do for her is to lay hands on her, to put her in the hands of God. We lay hands and pray for her. And actually, I just came back from Calgary last week, and I visited my son after my fuller study. And on Sunday, I had to leave. In the morning, we went to church together, and then we had dim sum, and then we were supposed to go back home to pick up the luggage and go. We run a little bit late. So by the time as we went into the apartment to get the luggage, he wants to run. I say, hold on, I have to lay hands and pray for you. And then my son said, Mom, you'll be late. I say, I'd rather be late for my flight than not giving blessing to my son. So I lay hands and pray for him. And every day, it's a little bit annoying. Every day, I text my children and say, how can I pray for you today? And sometimes they skip and they say, oh, I say, why didn't you answer my prayer, asking you for a prayer request? He told me, I thought that is a message yesterday. So now, I'm getting smart. I'm saying, how can I pray for you today? Bracket, Tuesday. Tuesday cannot have any excuse that this is a message for today. You better answer me, okay? And I tell them that I'll ask them every day, you know, through text messaging. And the 5-to-1 faith community web, it would be good that in your church and with the people around you, get 5 people that are willing to walk alongside with, invest time and invest love and care with your young child, you know, to walk with him together. And this is, again, another workshop that I have to go into. But I find that I'm very blessed. I don't know anything about it, but in my life, in my children's life, in this church, I've got 5 very close families. And when my children, they are going through a very tough time in the stormy season, the ladies took my daughter out, just like a godmother, one-on-one talk with her. And I say, wow, there's something, it's so precious. So go for it, okay? Try to get someone that are willing to walk alongside over the tightrope. That is the social capital that I'm talking about. And have more parent and child talk with them. And they're not always in the mood to talk. Whenever they're in the mood to talk, no matter how tired you are, no matter how busy you are, put it down and talk with them. Okay? And like once when I was still a pastor here, and I had to work the next day, all of a sudden my daughter wanted to talk. We talked until 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning. When I went to bed, my husband said, you're crazy, you have to work. Tomorrow you have to get up 7 and you'll talk until 3 o'clock. I say, wow, this is the time she's willing to talk. I better talk with her. Grab every moment when they're in the mood. They're not always in the mood to talk, okay? And be creative. When they're going to movie, they like movie, get a little more into the movie. Okay, when they like Japanese cartoon, get a little bit more into it. They like hockey, get a little bit more into it. And when you know the topic, you can talk with them and get subtly into the spiritual talk with them. Okay, don't avoid the sticky topics, something like sex education. If you don't tell them, someone else will tell them. Okay, and then the last but not the least is share your own stories. Instead of being very preachy, share your stories with them. Your how you struggle, you save, but how God lifted you up. And I'm going to share with them tonight that my computer almost go wacky and it's the spiritual warfare. And hey, yeah, you know, with God, you know, it can be solved, you know. So share your stories with them. And I find that many parents, they haven't even shared their conversion story with their children. And then so I've gone through this, the cultural, the psychosocial, the spiritual, and the physiological, and they have given you some suggestions. A lot to digest, I know, but hopefully give you an overall landscape of what it is, and when you go home, reflect on it and see how you could dance with your child. And I just want to encourage you with this baseball diagram. Could you do it? It seems that it's impossible, but you say, yes, we can. It's not from Obama. It's from it's from us. Yes, we can, okay? And it's like the baseball. The baseball itself could not catch the ball without the hand tucked in it, right? But when the hand is tucked into the ball, the glove, then you can catch the ball. Let the Holy Spirit, let us be filled with the Holy Spirit, get the wisdom from the Lord, and then we could do it and catch the ball. Go home, and I don't have time to read this review. Ezekiel 37, verse 1 to 10. Please put it down. This is always the Bible passage I encourage all the parents. It is talking about the prophet Ezekiel walked alongside with the Lord and on the plain and saw many of the scattered dry bones on the ground. But then the Lord said, do you think that we can put life into all these scattered dry bones, so dry already, you know? But with one command, God can pull all the dry bones together. But look at the last statement, the last verse. It's so encouraging. And it's not just that they stand up to, they pull together into a person. They came to life and stood up in their feet, a vast army. That means that they're not just becoming a person again, but they could be used by the Lord so well. Just like Lam Wan Wah, just like Billy Graham's son. They turn around, not just act as a person, but as someone that could be used by the Lord to be servant of the Lord. So the last one, I want to close this up with you as a prayer. And actually, I've given print out one family. You can pick out one from here. Okay, let's read it together slowly because I want you to read it. Okay, so we'll read it together as if this is our prayer. One, two, three. Dear Lord, you know my inadequacies. You know my weaknesses, not only in parenting, but in every area of my life. I am doing the best I can to raise my kids properly, but it may not be good enough. As you grow the fishes and the loaves to feed the 5,000 hungry people, now take my mega effort and use it to bless my family. Make up for the things I do wrong. Satisfy the needs that I have not met. Compensate for my blunders and mistakes. Wrap your great arms around my children and draw them close to you and be there when they stand at the great crossroads between right and wrong. I turn to you for solace when I've reached the end of my road. All I can give them is my best, and I will continue to do that. I submit them to you now and rededicate myself to the task you have placed before me. The outcome rests securely in your hands. I trust that God is faithful, as a loving Father, to hear and answer the cry of the heart. You will be there to comfort me and work within the soul of my beloved children. Amen. Let me pray for you. May the Lord bless you and keep you. May the Lord make his face to shine upon you and your children. May the Lord be gracious to your whole family. May the Lord turn his face towards you and your son and your daughters. May the Lord's peace be with every one of you. We pray in the wonderful name of our Lord Jesus. Amen. So because I also write some parenting articles regularly, and I am running out of many of the issues, but I still have some of them, and also I print out some of them from my record, you know, because some of them are related to what we are saying here today. So, and also I write some label as well, that talks about Chen Ta Chao Dong. So pick it up, and that's my brochure or whatever. So may the Lord bless you.